It gives me great pleasure to introduce Denise from Arroyo Grande.
Okay, hi everyone, I'm Denise, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi Denise.
So Kendall, I have till 9, right? Just kidding. What time do you want me to
show?
8. Like 5 to 8? Okay, perfect. So I'm Denise, I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the newcomers. Glad you're here. Welcome to the island of misfit toys. I've wanted to say that from the podium for a long time, so I'm glad I got that out. I have to give my friend Shinoa credit for that, and that's the one and only time I will. So happy birthday, Patty. Congratulations, that's a big deal. And welcome from Long Beach, that's where I got sober. Long Beach, California. So, and Kendall, thank you for asking me to lead. Quick story, this is gonna give you a brief history on Denise, is I don't like public speaking. I hate it, actually. And so Kendall came to this meeting as a secretary, and I knew she was a speaker seeker. So I would like go to the bathroom when the meeting was over, or go hide in the back room, or whatever I could do to avoid Kendall. And don't make eye contact with the speaker seeker ever. And you know, I have a therapist today because I'm very well, and she called me a slippery pig. And with Kendall chasing me for the speaker, I was like, I am a slippery pig. Maybe she's on to something. Anyway, that's what I pay for today. So it takes a lot to get people to come here and speak. So Kendall, good job. My hat's off to you. I know it's not easy to go up to complete strangers and go, hey, would you come speak? Like, no. So, and I'm glad to be here. Happy to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous today. My sobriety date is February 18th, 1993. I got sober in Long Beach, California. I did a lot of craziness in Long Beach, California, which is why I don't live there anymore. Thank you, my posse, for coming out. I appreciate you guys. We have this, you know, one thing that Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me is I have friends now. I have people that come out and support me and that I get to support. And so I'm grateful for the support that I have tonight and for the people that I don't know that are here. Just adds a whole level of pressure, and I need some blood pressure medication. And Suzanne told me not to be boring, so now I really have pressure because it's like, oh shit. But I did take notes, but I haven't opened them yet, just in case I forget. So if I forget and pause, I have my notes. So anyway, I'm not going to look at them because then I'll get distracted. I'll start talking from here. So anyway, experience, strength, and hope. That's what I was told to talk about here. So yeah. I qualify as an alcoholic. My drunkalog is short and boring. I started drinking at 15, and when I drank it brought me that feeling that I never felt before. And that was that feeling of ease and comfort. I was a very anxious kid. I was a very depressed kid. And so when I started drinking, I could be all those things that I always wanted to be. And as you know, being that younger person, I'm a child of chaos, and so alcohol for me, it brought stability, and it brought that being able to be around people. And but I wasn't really going to be one of those kids, you know, that got in trouble. So the way I compensated for that anxiety was I became an overachiever. And so I was that one that was not expected to be an Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And I was athletic, I was student government, I was honor student, all that stuff. And the reality was I was scared to death. And the way I compensated for it was overachieving and being wonderful. And so, at least my dad thought I was. So what happened is when you're a kid in high school, you know, and for me being a kid in high school, I drank at most of the functions. My goal was to get insanely drunk. That way I could fit in with you guys. And most of my peers were not doing that. You know, I was the one dragging them down. And what happens when you're a kid doing these things, sometimes you get put in weird spots that change your life. And that's what happened for me. And so my senior year, I decided I was done with all of it. And I finished school and I joined the military because my MO at that point had become, I just want to get the fuck out of here. I wanted to get as far away from where I grew up and where I lived as I could. And so now today I know my MO is to run. It's taken a long time to realize this, but my MO is to get out of here. I just got to go. And so I joined the military. And then I didn't go. Because I don't think I would have done very well in the military, quite frankly. And I couldn't pass their drug test by the time I went. So there I am, 18, and I'm full of piss and vinegar. And I had a high boyfriend in high school that described me as a horse at the gate, just kicking at the gate, just got to get out of there. And so I moved out, and I moved to Long Beach. And I hooked up with this crowd that was not the, like, you know, going to college, doing all that. I hooked up with the party crowd and immediately started doing supplements to my drinking. Because with that, I can drink a lot more.
Yeah.
And so I started supplementing my drinking and, you know, hung out with some interesting folks. And I grew up in Orange County, California. In Orange County, California, you don't do that. You're good and you're all this stuff. And so I was busting out of that role that I thought I was supposed to be in. And so I hung out with these older party people that were all at least 10 years older than me. And I remember them saying, well, you seem so mature. Yeah. And so I did that. And so I got introduced to a whole lot of different stuff with this crowd that I would have maybe, who knows, found it on my own. But I'm forever grateful to them because the drugs brought me to my knees a lot quicker than the alcohol would have. And so at the tender age of 25, I had this moment of clarity because my thinking is, if I'm not buying it, I'm not really a fill in the blank. So if I'm not buying drugs, I'm not a drug addict, even though I'm using drugs a lot. I could freely probably admit I was an alcoholic. My mom got sober when I was 12. And so I was dragged to these fucking meetings like this. And I hated it. You know, I hated going to AA meetings with my mom as a teenager. And they would have speaker meetings and dances. So all the future Alateens, you know, and ACAs were there. And we were creating havoc amongst ourselves. And so when I had that moment where I actually bought drugs, I'm like, that's it. I don't want to quit drinking, but I'm going to quit doing this. And so I saw a crisis counselor, and I said, I want to quit doing this. And she said, you probably might want to quit drinking. I said, no, I want to quit doing this. And she said, well, how much alcohol are you drinking? And I told her, well, of course I drink to get insanely drunk every time, because isn't that how people drink? And she looked at me, and she said, Denise, I think you might need to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. You might need to call your mom, and you probably need to get a sponsor when you go to Alcoholics Anonymous. So so it took me a minute to go to Alcoholics Anonymous because my memories as a child were not that awesome. And I did not want to belong to you people. It was the last thing I wanted. I remember going to Alcoholics Anonymous as a teenager and being so full of judgment. And also learning what it meant to be an alcoholic. So therefore, in my mind, if I'm not doing that, I'm not really an alcoholic. And when I got here, the reason I arrived is they had words for what I had done, for how I was feeling. And the words were that pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. And I had experienced that. I had crossed that line that normal people don't cross, that normal drinkers don't cross. And I had done some things that I was completely ashamed of. And so that day arrived that I came to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if I'd known that was going to be my last drink on February 17th, I would have had something different. But I had Rumpel Mints and Gatorade. That's the grossest thing I ever drank in my life. I don't know why I drank it. I was switching from scotch to brandy. I don't know. So I go to this meeting in Long Beach. It was a speaker meeting. And by the way, Matt, when Matt was doing the reading, right? So he's sitting up here and he's reading. And then he looked up and I thought, did he just go into a 12-step reading trance? Because his face changed and I'm like, what's he looking at? Oh, he's looking at the steps back there. I was like, oh, thank God. And the reason I say that is when I arrived in Alcoholics Anonymous, I was still not convinced I was an alcoholic. I still had some fight left in me that night I went to that meeting. So I go to this big, huge meeting in Long Beach. It's a speaker meeting. And by then I'm hallucinating because I've given everything up and of course I have to lose my mind. And so I'm hallucinating as I go to this meeting. And in my mind, there's a bright light coming from this church, right? And I can hear the roar of voices because it's a big meeting. It was like 300 people. And I walk up to this meeting and I walk in and there's a girl, a woman that I used to party with. And I was like, hey, I need a sponsor. Will you be my sponsor? I was that guy. I mean, you're apparently supposed to interview a sponsor, maybe, or ask how long they've been sober. So I just asked her. And she said, well, let me check with my sponsor. I'm like, okay, good. So, you know, check. Gone to a meeting, getting a sponsor. I'm following direction, right? Telling the mom that took a couple of days. But so I go to this meeting, and it's a huge speaker meeting in a church with these pews and stuff. And I'm like, I arrive and I'm hallucinating. Seriously, paranoid. I don't want to be touched. I don't want you to look at me. And so I made sure to sit in this row with 10 people on either side of me, away from everybody. There's like space, 10 people each side. And I'm rocking. Have you seen those people rocking in meetings? I was that guy, and I'm crying. And this man came and sat right next to me. And I'm rocking, and I'm crying. And then I'm paranoid, because why is he sitting next to me? And he put his hand on my knee, and he said, it's going to be okay. And that was the kindest thing that had happened to me in my entire life, really. And I was sold on Alcoholics Anonymous the minute that man sat next to me and told me it was going to be okay. Because I didn't feel okay by any stretch. And so the speaker that night, the way that this power greater than myself works in my life, that speaker that night told my story because I needed to hear my story. If I had not heard my story that night, I probably wouldn't have stayed. But he told my story to the T, 5 years ahead of me. His mom had gotten sober when he was 12. He was 5 years sober and gotten sober at 25. And I went up to him after that meeting. His name's Ren Carter. He was an engineer from West LA. I still remember his name and what he did. And he gave me his card. Who does that? That's what we do here. And so I left that meeting with maybe a sponsor, went to a meeting, and I was sold on AA, but I wasn't sure I was an alcoholic still. I thought maybe I just need to quit doing the drugs. And so 4 days later, well, in the interim, the next day, this woman called and said, sure, I'll be your sponsor, but I only have 30 days. And so my sponsor says, as long as I'm one step ahead of you, it's okay. See, you're all laughing. Yeah. I did not know you were supposed to laugh at that. I didn't know that wasn't a thing, you know? So I just said, awesome. And so so this sponsor, her name was Deborah. You know, God love her. I appreciate her. She saved my life. Because I would call her at the weirdest times because I'm hallucinating. I see shit coming out of the walls. And she would drive me to meetings because I wasn't able to drive because I was hallucinating. Shit would fly out of cars and so on. And I mean, I couldn't even read the big book. I'd be asked to read and the words would slide off the page. And I would just have to start saying no because I couldn't. And so the sponsor drove me to meetings. And sometimes she drove to faraway meetings. And we would sit there in the car, and she would talk and talk and talk. And I'd be like, I got big problems. I wanna talk about my life and my problems. Oh, Denise, oh, little one, you're so sick. And then she would just keep talking, and then she would end it with, enough about me, what do you think of me? And it was like, what fresh hell have I arrived into? This is not what I thought it would be, but the thing is She rode with me. She was my, she, you know, she, at 30 days of sobriety, she was already showing me what it was like to be a member of, active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. She had somebody that she was driving to meetings. She had a commitment at her house already on Sunday. She had a book study. And she had a sponsor. There was this whole sponsor committee over here. And they loved each other. They enjoyed each other. And so that's what I was shown, is you arrive here and you get busy. So 4 days after I got sober, I was finally convinced beyond a doubt that I was an alcoholic because they put me in a mental institution, which is what happens when you walk around hallucinating and telling people that you're seeing things. They eventually put you away. And so I took this disease through the gates of insanity. And that convinced me because I had heard the readings. Okay, I'm convinced. And I came out of that mental institution a week later. Really jacked up. I wondered where my shoelaces were. And still trying to figure out how you can kill yourself with a toothbrush, because they took away my toothbrush too. So these are the things I still think about 32 years later. It's like, what could I have done with the toothbrush, I wonder? So anyway, I got out of that mental institution and I went back to my meetings. And a few weeks later, I went back to work and my work began. And again, I'm a runner. So at 9 months sobriety, what do I have to do? I got to leave because things are getting okay. So I moved to Ventura from Long Beach. And but the reason I moved was I knew AA was there. I already had that faith in this program, in this fellowship being there. I could go wherever I wanted because wherever I go, AA's there. And it's the same thing. So I went. And I went full in and I dove in and I introduced myself as, you know, I'm 9 months sober and I moved. Yay! And I'm in a relationship. Look, we came. And so I did that, you know, and I moved to another city in sobriety and I did everything they suggest you didn't do in my first year of sobriety. And I did that and I went back to meetings. I got a sponsor right away and got back into the steps and worked and managed to get through them. I only got through the first three with my first sponsor, for obvious reasons, maybe. But so I moved there and I went through the steps and my life was really awesome. It was really awesome. And that first hostage situation obviously had to end. That's called a relationship in early sobriety. Mm. That's what I call it. So we ended up splitting up, and that was a little unsettling to me. It was a little like, oh, you know, but I'm sponsoring people and I'm doing the deal. And then somebody I sponsored OD'd and died. And she was my age. We were the same age. She had three kids. That threw me off. It was like, how can that happen? Because I'd never really had anybody die. And then shortly thereafter, I was coming up on 2 years sobriety and I started not sleeping, because I was stressed out and I was worried and anxious and depressed. And so I went to the doctor. I said, Doc, I'm not sleeping. He goes, well, here's a therapy card. Go get to it, kid. And so 3 days after that, I end up in yet another mental institution in sobriety. I love mental institutions. Because, you know, you get three squares a day. It's like jail, only for crazy people. So you get three squares a day. You get, like, counseling. You can go in and cry. And so I came out of there. I came out of there a week later and with some new information about myself that I didn't know before. And so that depression and anxiety runs a little deeper than I thought. And it shows itself in ways that aren't always the awesomest. So I got out of that and I got busy again. And everybody I knew had moved away, because when you lose your marbles in a fellowship, they kind of like, what the fuck just happened to her? You know, and I had lost my marbles. And so I got to start over again at 2 years sobriety. The sponsor I had didn't really want to deal with me anymore, and so I switched my meetings and started over again, because that's what I do. I like to just keep things moving. And I did this thing, and I had a home group. My old home group in Ventura was a Buckaroo Meeting Hall in Oxnard, California. It was the craziest bunch of people I've ever met in my life. They also showed me how to be part of a group and how to be loving. I had some great sponsorship down there, and life is going great. I've got the dream job. I've got the girl, no offense, well, I've got the girl, and I've got this great fellowship, and so what do I do? It's time to move. So at 11 years sobriety, I moved, because that's what I do. And I moved up to Paso Robles, because that seemed like a good idea. I didn't have a sponsor at that time, just for the record. I didn't run that by anybody. And so I moved, and I moved without my partner. We lived separately for a very long time, but so we buy this house and I move up here, and the reason I do that, my life is great. You gotta understand, my life is great. There's nothing going on, so I have to make some shit up. So I move. And so when I got to Paso Robles, I can move to Paso Robles because AA's there. It's always there, it's gonna be great. So I moved to Paso, and I went to some meetings, and I was like, I don't like these people. I'm not going to go. So I call those years between 10 and 18 my wonder years, though I wonder where I went years. And what happens is when you stay away, you get very sick. I got very sick. 2 years after I moved up there, my dad died. And my dad was my person, and I didn't know how to grieve that. I didn't have the net that I had in the fellowship. I didn't have any support, and I didn't know how to deal with it. This program teaches us how to live on life on life's terms. When I'm in it, I can do that. But if I'm out of it, I don't know how to do it. And that's just for me. And so my dad died, and that was hard. He was my person. As a matter of fact, I've learned since then that he was kind of my God for a long time, even in sobriety. And that year, at the end of the year, I decided I was going to drink. I got it. Thanks. So at the end of that year, after my dad died, I'm going to drink. We're on our way to a New Year's Eve party, and I'm done. I don't care about the consequences. I don't care. And that's what happens for me when I step away from the fellowship and the sunlight that is here. I still believed in God. I was pissed at God. I had a great, strong belief in that bastard. And I was mad. I was mad that he took my dad. And so that New Year's Eve, I decide I'm going to drink. And coincidentally enough, it was a party in Arroyo Grande. And who shows up but some friends from Ventura that are part of the sober community. So, and one of them was my sponsor for 2 weeks, and then she said she'd rather be friends. See that? Friendy. Anyway, so one of them was my sponsor for a season, and so she showed up at this party with another friend of mine, and I told her I wanted to drink that night, and she said, please don't. Not in front of us. And I said, okay, I won't tonight. And that's all I told her. I won't tonight. She stayed. We stayed for this thing, and we went our separate ways. And I told her I wouldn't drink, period. I didn't say I was going to go back to meeting, and I didn't. So I didn't go back to meetings, and I kept getting sicker and sicker. And then this friend that showed up miraculously at this party got diagnosed with cancer. And that's the wonder of this program. That's the magic. I was able to go down there and spend time with her and help take care of her because she let me. And then I was able to be part of her bucket list and take her camping on the beach because that was her bucket list. And that's the power of the God that I have in my life, that I got through here. So I spent about 8 years outside of AA, and I did a lot of things. I hosted foreign exchange students in Paso Robles. I lived out in bumfuck Egypt. I don't know what I was thinking. I'm a city girl. So I lived out there, and I hosted these foreign exchange students. They were so fun because I still had a life. I was just mad. I was mad that God took away my dad. And I would pay quarterly visits to Alcoholics Anonymous. I would drop into a speaker meeting. It's hard to go to a meeting when you're totally grieving and just a train wreck and they don't know who you are and they're like, well, I don't know. So I would do drop-ins and speaker meetings, and I was playing sober softball. Newsflash, if you're a sober softball player, that alone is not enough. I'm telling you right now, but it did keep me sober. It did keep me sober because, you know what, I loved these girls that I played ball with, and we had so much fun, and I still had that. I wasn't dead yet. I just was mad at God. And so I'm in a business that tanked during the mid-2000s. And so that went sideways. So I'm sad, no dad, sad, no money, sad, no business, sad, what do I do? Life's just happening. This is life on life's terms, and I couldn't do it. I didn't care. So I didn't care when I ran out of money and we couldn't afford the house anymore or the cars. I didn't care. Just fucking take it. And so we made our move down to Arroyo Grande, which is where my in-laws live. And I'm going to tell you the reason we moved to Paso Robles in the first place, one of the many reasons was to be closer to family. And so we've been here for 22 years, right? 22 years? 22 years. And the thing is a couple weeks ago, the reason I moved here was to be closer to nieces and nephews because I don't have kids. So a few weeks ago, I got to spend my nephew's 29th birthday with him. And we played drunk kickball. They were drinking, I wasn't. But they were playing drunk kickball and they invited me to go because I'm the crazy aunt who just doesn't stay in the lines. And that's why I did it in the first place. And so that's the power of staying sober. Even if you're pissed off and angry and hate God and everybody else, just don't drink and come back eventually. Because those are the miracles. That's why I'm here today. That's why I moved up here, was to be closer to these kids, and they want me to be part of their lives. Amazing. Now their parents, maybe not. They're like, do you really have to hang out with them? Yes, I do. They like me. So anyway, so we moved down to Arroyo Grande, and I happened to move around the corner from this Alano Club in Arroyo Grande. It was the old Serenity Group. It was in this, like, apparently they used to bury bodies there or something. And I would take my dog over to the dog park and watch these people. And I'm like, that's an AA meeting hall. You know it is, because they're all out there smoking. Sometimes they yell at each other. Oh, it's awesome. And I smoked it, thought, wow, this is really cool. But I wasn't going to go, because these meetings up here are fucked up. You know, it's like, get a leader, lead, call on people. And because, you know, again, where I got sober was different. And so I came up here full of my attitude and stuff, just like, no. So eventually we my sister-in-law moved in with us when she was getting a divorce. And, you know, I was dropping into meetings sometimes, occasionally. Forgot to take a chip for a birthday one year. I wonder where I went. And so my sister-in-law moved in with me, and this is how my God works in my life. So the sister-in-law drank every day. Not a lot, not drunkenly, just enough to be irritating. Because who just drinks one glass? You know, I drank to get insanely drunk when I drank. And like, just one glass or two. Like, can you still have a conversation? That's not even, why bother drinking if you're not gonna just kill yourself? But I noticed, and it bothered me. And so I started going to meetings at the Mesa Meeting Hall. And that's my home group today. And that was about 15 years ago. And I started going to meetings there. So I was pretty pissed off by the time I arrived back. I'm like 17 or 18 years sober, and I haven't been going to meetings, and I'm still mad at God, and I'm unhappy with my life. It's not turning out the way I thought it should. Because I had that God of material, of the material world. I called it checkbook spirituality, and my spiritual condition was directly linked to my checking account, and I tell you that today with all honesty, that's what I knew. But staying away and becoming even worse off than when I arrived emotionally, humbled me, and it made me very eager. And so I started going to the Mesa meeting, and you know, I didn't identify as anything because I had like 18 years sobriety, you know. But I'm like this, just glaring at people, and I'm so tight, and I'm so angry. And so they're scared, probably. I mean, I see them now, I'm scared. I'm scared of you. And so I showed up really angry and really afraid and really just sad. And I sat there for 6 months at this meeting hall. Nobody ever called to me because they were scared. I don't blame them. And I'm like sitting there with my arms crossed. What is wrong with these people? Because I came from sobriety, from recovery, that open shares. And of course, you hear the same people over and over. But at least I could have chimed in and said, hey, I feel really fucked up. And here I am. So I finally, but I kept going back. And the thing is when I was new, I did exactly what they told me to do. I had that gift of desperation that they talk about. I was willing to do anything, and I did. I went to meetings all the time. I had my first commitment at 30 days of sobriety. Because that's what I was told to do. Funny thing about that first commitment, it was in Long Beach. And I went because I was the only woman there. And so I felt safe. And so I was a cake girl at this meeting. Well, I look back in retrospect and I realize it was probably a gay men's meeting because it was all gay men. And then there was me. But they let me come back, but I didn't know how to read a meeting schedule because they were written back then. It wasn't on the internet. And I didn't know how to read it because it was all flipping off the page. But I kept going back week after week and they're like, welcome, keep coming back. And so I did. But there was never another woman there, ever. Anyway, and that's the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous.
Wow.
Because if I walked into a straight men's meeting, they'd be like, oh no, honey, you out. But again, that's the way my God works. It's a very forgiving God that meets me exactly where I am, no matter how sick I am. So I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous very sick, very angry. Got a sponsor. She's here tonight. And I was really very, very angry for a long time. Then I started to relax. Got commitments. I was involved, doing the whole thing. Yay, life is good. But my perspective has changed in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's no longer about all that stuff out there. It's about what's happening here. Because I beat myself into that bottom that I needed to go into that I maybe didn't have when I got here. And it's called that emotional, spiritual bottom. And so I came back and got commitments, got a sponsor, doing the thing, sponsoring people. Blah, 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 blah. And then my mom calls one day and she's got cancer. My mom got sober when I was 12. It was probably not the funnest childhood. I don't remember most of it. So, of course, my mom has cancer. She's not going to treat it, so she's going to die. Okay, Mom, you need to come up and live with me because I can't drive down there to take care of you. And I don't have a sponsor at this time, really. But I would do the same thing again. And so my mom moved up here. She had 30 plus years of sobriety. I had 24. I don't know. It doesn't matter anymore. But anyway, my mom moved up here and she was going to die from this. And I'm like, okay, Mom, how can I help you? Because that's what this program has taught me to do. Okay, Mom, how can I be of service to you? Now, my mother had told me she had no more than a year to live. I can do anything for a year. 6.5 years later, I'm not sure I can keep doing this. Just kidding. No, I'm grateful. I'm grateful for that time with my mom. So my mom moved up here. And the poor thing, I'm a runner, okay? My mom was in the same house for like 30 years. I'm that guy that you write in pencil on your phone book. So my mom, who hadn't moved in 30 years, got to move 3 times in 6.5 years with us. So she got to, she got to see life for real. So my mom moved in, and and the problem with that was my part. I still wanted her to be a mom, and she wasn't able to do that. She never was. And that's what I learned from my experience with my mom. So I was really angry when my mom moved in with me, because, you know, by then I'm like, I'm feeling okay and everything's balanced and yay, life's great, woo. And then my mom moved in and more was revealed that I simply didn't know about. And then I got angry again. And then I got really hurt. And then I told her she could stay with us till she died, and I didn't want her to. But what this program has taught me is just do the next right indicated thing. Do what you say you're going to do. And so I did, even though it hurt, even though it was really painful. I did that thing. Now, my mom is a character, and she had decided that when the day came that she was going to be in charge. She was going to choose when she died. It's legal now. So my mom was getting sicker from the treatments, from the cancer, and I'm going to add one thing to this. I was about 15 years sober before I decided I maybe wanted to make amends to my mom. Because I'm a slow learner bit. So I drove, I at the time I lived in Paso, I was in therapy, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to make amends to my mom. So I'm going to drive down there, and I'm going to do this thing, right? Make this, mend this relationship. Try to have it be different. So I drove down to LA where my mom lived, and showed up, and she knew why I was going. She'd been sober for a long time. She knew what was coming. So I go into the house, and we both smoked at the time, and started smoking, had dinner, and then, okay, we're going to have this talk. My mom talked for like 4 hours. I didn't get a word in edgewise. And I'm like, this is not how I intended this to go, right? But what happened with that process was I learned a lot about my mom that I didn't know before. And so when she moved in with me, I had a greater understanding. Isn't that what I prayed for in that 7-step prayer? That prayer of Saint Sissy? Better to understand than to be understood. So I got that when she moved in with me. I got why that went that way. Because that's how God works in my life. And so when the day came, my mom's getting sicker and sicker, and her hospice nurse tells her that the morphine is going to cause dementia and she won't be able to make a choice. So my mom decided, they have this thing in California, this medical aid in dying. And I told my mom from the gate if she wanted, whatever she wanted to do, I would support her. And so when that day came, my mom, Mother's Day 2021, because that's how my mom rolls, she told me she was ready to go. And she'd chosen her date. And I didn't think I could do that at that point. I just collapsed. Not in front of her, because I had to be strong. But I collapsed. I'm like, I can't do this. But I had this God that I was praying to at that point. God, I wasn't mad at God anymore. I understood. I understood that this was all just part of me being a grown-up, which I didn't want to be. And so what we did, I said, Mom, can we have a going away party for you? My mom was a hermit, didn't really have a lot of friends, but we got to have a going away party for her. And it was people that I knew in the program and some people that she had met up here. She got to have the cake that she wanted. And she said, it's my going away party. And it was also her last meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, because most of the people there were sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous. My in-laws were there, a few of my in-laws, and they're just like, what's going on here? But it was her last meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous 2 days before she died. And on the day that she died, I was with her, What I've learned about me is I'm very fear-based. I'm so afraid of so much. So afraid of so much. My mom was the same. She didn't want to die alone. She was afraid of dying alone. That was her biggest fear. And so I told her, Mom, you're not going to die alone. I'll be there with you. And so we were. And so on that morning, the way that God works in my life is my mom, you know, it's a hard decision to do that. There's a prescription that you get, and it's hard to take it. So I got to sit there with her, do that. And the way that this God works in my life is by the time she had finished her last part of the phase of this next phase of life or whatever, her hospice nurse showed up. And that's how God works, because we didn't call him. He just showed up. He was a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. My mom loved him. He's still part of my life today. He came to our going away party. And that's how this program works. And that's really how this program works, is you ask and people show up. Now, when I arrived here, that was not how I lived. When I arrived here, I was terrified. When I arrived here, I was so angry and so terrified, and I thought, if I could just figure life out or master it or endure it, I'd be good. And our literature talks about that. That's as far away from God as you can get. I gotta go to my notes. I have a few more minutes. Oh, here we go. So now my mom brought up some stuff, and I was like, oh shit, I'm so miserable, I'm so angry. I know I need to get back. I know I need to go through the steps again. I need to, you know. We had COVID, it was hectic, we all know how that went. So my mom passed in 2021, and I had endured that last 4 years with her with COVID and all this shit. I just was treading water. And I knew when my mom passed, I was gonna have to get down to causes and conditions. So when she passed, I got a sponsor later that fall, a different sponsor later that fall, and I chased her. I was like, I've gotta work the steps, you don't understand. I mean, I pursued it. I was like, I am such a wreck. And I had that gift. I had that gift of desperation at 28 years of sobriety. Like, I am such a wreck. Please help me. And she did. And I was ready finally to let go of some of these old ideas that I had about myself that I didn't know why, I just did. And now I knew why. So I can work on those old ideas today. I wrote down with this new information, I was ready to look at old attitudes towards my instincts and see that they needed to undergo drastic revisions. That's in our 12 and 12. That's what happens if you stay here. If you're new, just don't drink and come back. Hook up with some people that seem to be enjoying their lives. That's one thing I've always, one thing since I got sober is I've always, always enjoyed my life. Even when I was pissed off at God, I was still like, this is the best thing ever. So I wrote down some stuff. Stuff that really it's all about the program for me. And if you're new, you know, again, powerless over alcohol and our lives are unmanageable. Just, you know, do that for today. Go to meetings. Go to as many meetings as you can. We transform calamities into assets, sources of growth and comfort to ourselves and those about us, and then turn them into demonstrations of faith. Because this is a spiritual program. What I learned, what they told me when I got here, was I had a spiritual malady. I had a physical allergy combined with a mental obsession. Bye, guys. See you next time. And I've proven that to be true. When I arrived here, I was very skeptical and doubt, and I thought I was smarter than these guys that wrote this book. So I have to show them that, you know, somehow I'm an exception to every rule. And being sober for a long time and staying away has reshaped me. And I think that is as it should have been for me. I wouldn't suggest it for you. It's painful, super painful. But today I'm super grateful, because that's how I needed to learn. That's how I needed to hit that bottom, to be completely willing to have God enter my life in a new and really powerful way. I'm super passionate about AA today. I'm probably more involved than I ever have been. And when I was new, I was busy. I mean, I was busy, conventions and this and that, but you know what? My focus is laser clear today, where it wasn't before. I'm gonna say one last thing and then I'm gonna shut up. The 12-step work. Thank you for letting me come tonight and do some 12-step work with you guys. I appreciate it. Because by working these steps, we are making ourselves ready to receive this free gift, which is a kind of love that has no price tag on it. And that's what I've learned today. In these rooms, with this fellowship, there's a kind of love that has no price tag on it. And with that, I can take it out into the world. And it seeps into every relationship that I have. And for that, I'm grateful.
Let's give Denise another round of applause.